ICEA Gear has outfitted over 10,000 bow hunters across the country, and we're continuing to raise the bar when it comes to bow hunting camo. New for the 23 season, we introduce our never-before-seen panel fabric system designed to be dead quiet, along with our patent-pending bow hunting collar. ICEA Gear. Features and function built for bow hunters by bow hunters. Learn more at asiogear.com.
Welcome to Bear Bow Hunter Podcast with your host, Nate Bailey, where we look to the ancient paths of our hunting ancestors to guide our future, where woodsmanship and hard work outweigh advanced shooting devices, where we value those who have gone before us and welcome those who are yet to come. Join us as we exchange valuable insight about the Bear Bow Hunter's lifestyle. Welcome to another edition of the Life Outdoors podcast, and I may probably put this in the Bear Bow Hunter podcast as well. Today we have with us a really good friend of mine, probably one of the guys that I think knows probably the most about elk in Oregon, and that's Trent Fisher. I knew you're gonna laugh when I said that.
I'll take it, but I don't know if it's true.
Well,
but, I've screwed up more elk than anybody else in the state of Oregon. I can promise you that.
Well, you know, there's those guys out there that do know a ton of elk, a ton about elk. Some of them we never have heard on a podcast or anything else. But, you know, we got guys actually around me up here.
Oh, yeah.
That are just, I mean, you know, they've got some elk every year. They're in the Cascades and killing elk. And I would put you in that group.
I appreciate that. We just the other day, actually, we've been doing these Elk Week videos. So we've been doing this. We started this thing this year called Elk Week, and it's kind of a hype to get ready for season. And anyway, going through calls and all sorts of different stuff and shot placement and everything. And the biggest response that we got from that was interesting. Well, you talked a lot, but what about the solo hunter? What about the solo hunter? Everybody, I mean, that was the biggest question and response to the whole thing, which was really cool. And it's something that when we were making it, we didn't think about. And then afterwards in post, we're like, well, shoot, man. I mean, when we started out, all we had was a cameraman usually with us because we'd split up into groups, you know. And so it would be like me and Trevor filming me. And so it was just like, well, we were actually kind of solo hunters, you know, minus the camera guy, and we didn't, I don't think, acknowledge that part of it. And so we're doing a video right now, and it's just going back into things that a solo hunter, you know, needs to know or should know, or some things that may or may not help him out. And so anyway, kind of cool, but it kind of leads into what you're talking about as far as just like hunting and success, you know, and right. Then a lot of people do it by themselves. So.
Man, I'll tell you what, that whole series, and I watched all of it because for nothing else than to watch all the elk footage, you know, and get jacked up over it. But at the same time, there was so much information passed on there. And if people don't understand the amount of experience that was being fed out of those videos, they should.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. The response that we got from it was huge. It was really, really neat. We didn't have a clue how it would go. And the cool thing that we're doing to all the listeners out there is, you know, we ended off, and I don't know if we did a great job at really publicizing this, but we ended off at, hey, we want to see your hunts. We want to see other people's hunts, and we're going to put them on our channel this next year. So, and submit all your hunts, and then we want to show other people so we can get hopefully them started into filming their own hunts or whatever they want to do with it as far as that goes. So anyway, that was the ending thing. And I, like I said, I don't know if we really did a great job at showing that or telling that story, but we'll be definitely promoting that down the road and to inspire other people to kind of get out and do what we've done, what you've done, Nate. I mean, same kind of thing. It's not easy. It's not an easy deal.
No, you'll learn a lot more though. I think by filming, you're going to learn so much more about your elk hunting and the stuff, mainly looking at the stuff you do wrong all the time.
I would totally agree with you. Totally agree with you, because you can look back at it, and then it's you can watch it over and over and over and over.
Right, you know? Right. Well, yeah, and that hurts sometimes, but
it does.
Yeah,
it does.
You know, the bull I got in 2020, I wasn't able to hunt last year because I was in Mississippi, but
right.
The bull I got in 2020, that one, I still don't have the antlers hung up on the wall because it hurts. That, you know, I hit that bull really bad. And so when I edited that footage, it was all I could do to edit it. I mean, it really was. And there's so much more footage of that bull that I didn't put in anything because it was that hard for me to watch because I hit him so bad. You know,
and that's what makes us, I think that's what makes us human. And that's what makes us, you know, I think that's the other spectrum of hunting, right? Everybody thinks we're just savages and we just don't care. And we're out bloodthirsty to kill something and everything. We care for these animals more than anybody on this planet cares for these animals. And so it's just like, man, it hurts us.
Yeah.
Oh, so bad when something goes wrong.
Yeah, you know, and one of the big things about video too, and you guys just put out a video. If you guys have not seen that video of you showing people how to video their hunts, that was probably one of the most informative that I've seen, coming from cameramen too.
Yeah, that's what we wanted to do, is have the camera guys and have them. They're great. And anyway, and from their perspective, because our perspective, you know, might be a little different. So
right.
I thought that was really good, and I thought it turned out well, too.
I thought it turned out really well. There was some stuff that I picked up. Matter of fact, I sent it to the guys that are hunting with us this year, and I said, hey, pick up some of these tips.
Yeah.
Because there's some definite things, and they're like the shot type stuff, and over the shoulder and standing off to the left. That's stuff I've never even thought about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, and it's stuff that it has to be second nature, or else it could go real, real wrong.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So
yep.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I'm actually, this time next week, I'll be over in a place in Ochoco, hunting antelope. And, and I'm going to be by myself. So I'm going to try to video everything. And the biggest reason really is not to try to gain anything on YouTube or anything like that. Although, you know, I like getting the views and stuff, but
sure.
This is a 13-year tag and it's in a place where my grandfather started hunting in the 40s, and and we actually have a rock blind over there that's the rule that every time that we pass back by it, we have to put another rock on it.
That's cool.
Yeah, so I want to video it for my grandkids, basically, so that's, you know, talking about videos. That was one of the things that you guys kind of got me stoked on, is all the different video angles. You know how you guys have the shots and then you run the GoPros, and then I start looking at your footage and I'm like, they do a lot of that, you know, and it just flows together. You don't even think that there's more than one camera there.
Yeah, no, it's all in editing and how it comes out in post. But at the same time, if you don't use those shots, you can't pick from them. You know what I mean?
Right. So let's shift a little bit of gears here, and I'm going to see what you guys are up to this elk season. Do you guys have plans put out, or what you got going on?
No, I don't really post plans, but I will tell you anything. You know that. So.
Well, you know, this will go out to the three guys that listen to this. So
yeah, right. There's a lot more than that. So, you know, we drew some tags this year.
Good.
Again. And we've got some tags in the pocket that they're not, I mean, I wouldn't say they're the best of the best of the best of the state, but we will be hunting over in Eastern Oregon for a couple different tags this year again. So that'll be fun to that's been kind of a fun deal to actually go over east, and it's different, you know, than the Roosevelt game. That being said, the Roosevelt game is, you know, kind of what we cut our teeth on, and it's what a lot of people really, really like to see. They like to see that west side, you know, coastal rainforest, hard, you know, thick,
right,
that kind of stuff, which I totally, you know, I like to do it too, don't get me wrong. I really, really like to hunt Roosevelt's, but it is cool to step out, you know, of something that you've done all your life and kind of try something new as well. So we haven't decided yet. Either first week we're going to go over, it all kind of depends on fire danger from what I've been hearing. I've been trying to keep updated on it And right now, I guess it's pretty dry over east is what I've been hearing. So I don't know. Maybe you can touch on that more too, Nate, if you know anything. You're kind of coastal-ish too. I mean,
yeah,
Cascades, but you know what I mean? I don't know. It's just I've heard there's fire in the gorge right now, right by the gorge up towards Portland there, east of Portland. So I don't know. I have no idea what's going to kind of transpire yet. And now I've heard maybe closures coming up and stuff like that. So we'll just have to play it by ear a little bit and see what happens there. So, but no. And then on the coast here, it's actually been pretty damp. And that's still, I think, a level one where I'm at right now, which is crazy for right now, especially with like the years past have been so dry and just burning. I mean, right now, well, shoot, where you live was on fire bad last year, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, we've been following. I have an app on my phone, actually. I've been watching. We had a thunderstorm on the 3rd.
Yep.
That was absolutely crazy. It looked like Mississippi, the way that the thunder and lightning happens there. And all of, matter of fact, I have on one of our number one spot that I have cameras in there and we got elk on it and there's fires surrounding it. So,
no kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah. And then our number two spot's got fires in it too. And so, yeah, we're really going to have to practice what we preach about, you know, looking getting your priorities set because things are changing on us now. So, we're at high up here. The cool thing about the lightning is we had like monsoonal rains with it. So,
nice.
Yeah. So it put out a lot of those fires and a lot of the fires that, I'm tracking are less than an acre. So
okay.
I don't think they're going to go anywhere. I think they got them handled.
And yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, and then, I'm going over at Central Oregon. That unit usually is really good, just because of their active forest management over there. They'll usually be, like, one setting back behind the rest of the state, and because of the way that the forest is. It's just not as dangerous. They have their fires, but they don't have those big crown fires in there.
Yeah. Is that because of the topography? Well, no, there's some pretty rugged stuff over there.
Yeah, no, it's basically because of, for one, the fires are really easy to work on because, you know, you have the deep canyons and then flats on top. So it'll burn in the canyon, burn up the canyon, and they can stop it at the top. Another thing is the big, pine forests that they have are all really clean. I mean, there's like no brush in it. You could walk... Walking 15 miles in a day over there is not hard at all.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. So yeah. I think that's got a lot to do with it. And it's higher, you know, shoot, we're hunting. Well, I guess it's not higher than places I hunt around here, but, it holds snow longer. Let's put it that way.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And then it gets cooler at night probably too because of the elevation, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, and the water. It was real dry last year. This year it looks a whole lot better over there.
Gotcha.
Of course, we aren't going to be elk hunting anywhere other than the Cascades this year. So that's...
that's tough. That's a tough one, brother. That's a tough one.
You know, we've got used to it and we love it. It is tough, though. It's a lot of work. I've been running since June just to get ready for it, you know.
Some of our early videos we did in the Cascades, you know, and hunting over there. It was, I think you're right, as far as once you get kind of used to it and kind of feel it out, the terrain and what's going on there. I would agree with you. It is kind of that way. But, it just seemed like the Cascades have been just beaten to death these last probably 15 years, I would say. And it's just like, I think there used to be a lot more game in there than there is now.
Yeah. I think it's definitely changed. You know, with the fires that have happened, we have fires in the north part of the section that I hunt, and those fires have changed the game for most people. I have a friend that used to guide all that, and they don't even run a camp in there anymore.
Really? Okay. Yeah. No, I've just, the more I've heard of guys and everything and hunting over there, they just said, man, all their elk herds are just drying up. He said, there's used to be a lot of elk, and he said, you can hardly find one anymore from what, you know, just different people I've talked to.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they're moving. I think they're moving to different spots. A lot of it too. But yeah, I love the Cascades. And the reason I do is because there's so much habitat and it is so wild in some of the wilderness areas that, if you're willing to put in the miles, usually you'll find them. So,
yeah. Yep. No, that's a fact. It's from just having that willingness to go. Right.
Yeah. And making a plan, you know, that's the thing that I think probably turned us into getting into elk a lot more is coming up with a good idea of how we're going to go and knowing where the elk like, and if they're not in there, get the living tar out of there and go somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Stay mobile. That's a great, man.
Yep.
That's huge. People, yep. I hear it all the time. It's just, hey, you know, I hunted the same place for 20 days this year and I saw one herd of elk. I'm thinking, why did you do that to yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this year we feel a little bit behind schedule too, and we got 10 different spots, you know, and
oh, you do. You have that many.
Oh yeah. I have to, you got to put that many in front of you so you can, you know, have an idea of what to do when you do go into a place and there's nothing there.
That's awesome. No, that's good for you. That's awesome. Yeah. At least have three people, at least have 2 to 3 spots. And then, but 10, that's even better. Even better.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're quick checks. I mean, you go in and check, and if there's no elk there, then you just don't even – you just mark it off.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, no, that's awesome. Yeah, so to answer your question, I guess we will be over in Eastern Oregon probably at least half the season, and then if not more, and then on the coast as well, like that – maybe that first and that last week or something of that nature. So
right. That's
kind of our game plan for right now, and just kind of – monitoring what happens with the weather and all that too. So yeah, I'm excited for this season. I actually have a bow tag this year. So
I'm excited for that. I can't wait to see how that it's been a while.
It's been a while, buddy. I think it's been 3+ years, maybe 4. I took a year off, and then I rifle hunted after that for 2 or 3. Yeah. I think it's been three or four years.
Although that rifle hunt last year was pretty bad. That was pretty cool.
It was pretty fun. Yeah, man. It was, it's hard to replace those memories. That's for sure.
Yeah.
It's been great though. Getting the bow back and anyway, not, you know, kind of relearning it all over again. And I mean, I did it for a long time. Don't get me wrong.
But no, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
It's the same time. It's like, okay, yeah, this is, you know, this is fun again. And so it's been a blast actually out shooting. I've been shooting almost every day for the last quite a while and getting a little more proficient at that and better. And then, you know, start it off and we'll see what happens.
Oh, yeah. I know what's going to happen.
I'm going to screw up a bunch more elk. At some point. But
yeah,
we will see. But no, I'm excited for this season. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And just with the tags that we have too, I think afterwards, I think there should be some really, really good footage of a lot of good bugling, just a lot of good action is what I'm hoping with the places that we're headed.
Yeah, so. It's cool. It's cool too that you got Oregon. You know,
Oh man, it's so awesome. That's what I'm jacked again. Last year we stayed in Oregon the whole year, and it looks like we're going to this year. Although we are that dumb. As far as there is times that we'll go, let's try to Colorado and we'll drive all night
to
Colorado for 5 days for some stupid reason or something and get over the counter tags. But so far our plans are just to stay right here in Oregon and be able to hunt our own state and save on fuel money. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you.
Oh man. Yeah. It's spendy. Everything's spendy.
You know, that's one of the good things about where we're hunting this year is it's pretty much all Suzuki reachable.
You can use the little rig.
The little rig, yeah. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. No, but, yeah. So, the other big thing is our calls, man.
Yeah, that's, I was wanting to talk. That's actually what I was trying to get you on here for, was talking about the calls.
Yeah, No, we've taken on an adventure and started a call company and about 2 years ago, and it's just starting to blossom now as far as manufacturing and getting all those ducks in a row. And man, it's been, we've been super blessed with the people that have backed us and been behind us and are starting to use the calls a lot. And but we've put a ton of time into it, man, trying to make the best calls on the market. And that's our big thing. If we can't make something better, there's no sense in making it, right? Is my opinion.
Yeah, I hear you. And they are. They're really good calls. You know, this last series that you put out. Now, the yellow, what's yellow? Is it the reed?
That's the committed reed.
Committed.
That's Yep.
Now, the yellow reed, I was really impressed. I was really impressed with all of them. I've used the black and the blue and the yellow for quite a few years. But one of the things that we really like, Gage and I both are pretty hard on calls. And mm-hmm. Having some of the newer, thicker ones too has been really nice. We really
okay, cool.
Like that OTC is
yeah. You can blow a call really, really well. I have to have like a thinner latex. I got to have a less stretch because I have my palate's kind of weird. But you can, it's so different. That's
it
the
is.
Whole thing.
Man. It is.
It's so different for everybody, and it's so hard because everybody, you know. I get the email all the time. It's like, oh, so what's the best call for me? You know, and it's like, man, that is such a broad question. I can't tell you. I have no idea, you know, and it's just, I always tell them just start out with something pretty light, you know, pretty small and then go from there, you know? So, man, it's just, yeah, it's awesome that you're blowing those tougher calls too. I mean, you've done it for a long time. You're pretty versed at it and good at it.
I think I'm pretty bad at it. That's why I need thicker calls.
So, I don't think that's the way it works. I don't think that's the way it works. I researched it.
I started calling elk with the old Larry Jones Predator, or what was that? Persuader, I think it was. Do you remember that with the metal reed?
Yeah. And, sound like a duck call on steroids.
Right, and it gave you a headache every time you blew it.
Yep.
Yeah, that one. So starting there and then switching over to reeds, you know where I come from now.
Oh,
you had to blow your guts out to get any kind of sound out of that thing.
Oh, those were so. Yeah, we had one of those one time way back in the day. Quick story, and you know, and Cody and all the guys, they can call pretty darn good. And anyway, and Ty brought the old duck call, the old Dominator. Cody bugles and bugles and bugles, and Ty grabs that thing and just blows the most god awful weirdest sound. Bull just cracks right out.
I love those stories though.
That's so awesome. Yeah.
This was like in the late 80s. We had one of those. My dad actually was hunting with my mom and her mom, so my grandmother.
Okay.
And there's this little patch of timber that's out in the middle of this. And back in those days, you know, not too many people were bow hunting, more or less elk hunting. And they were out in the middle of this timber patch, and Dad blew that thing, and a bull comes up out of the and comes over to that timber patch, and my mom and grandma were trying to climb the trees so quick because they're afraid that bull was going to come get them.
No kidding.
Yeah, and they scared it off, and he was upset. That was the first bull he ever called in.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's those old stories. I mean, it's just awesome to hear them. And but it does go to show, you know, I mean, we try to make the most realistic sounding elk calls and everything, but sometimes, you know, that's not always what it takes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, and quite honestly, it is though, to have an elk call like a reed or diaphragm, whatever you want to call them, to have one that is easier to and you guys is there's a lot of years put into your calls. I mean, you've been doing this for a while.
Yeah. We took apart every call that we could find. We bought every single one and we tried to make it better, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I like the new series, I was just blown away at some of the new stuff, and not that the old stuff wasn't something that I was using a lot either, but like I said, you know, Gage and I are just really hard on calls. We're not easy on calls. And,
right.
And I think that's because we're just not finesse type people. We're kind of like, get through it and blow hard. And
perfect.
Yeah. And
yeah.
But I was gonna kind of go from, because you have, let me see, what, 7 calls now? 7 reads?
Yeah, correct.
And
yeah.
And with the 7, what would you say is probably the thickest, you know, takes the most wind to blow out of all the 7?
I'd say that OTC or the Land of the Free call. Both of those are pretty pretty thick latex. And people listening, what makes a reed, diaphragm reed like Nate's talking about is just the differences in them are the thickness of the latex that you use. And sometimes it's not even latex. Like our Reason call, it's a prophylactic.
Right.
It's thinner than latex. So, but it's the thickness of the latex or whatever, whatever you're using for your reed. And then it's the stretch. And so how much that is stretched, from frame to frame, from the sides of the frame. So what I'm saying is, you know, sometimes a thinner latex with a less stretch, you're going to have to use less air to make a noise out of. But like Nate's saying, sometimes you can do what they call blowing through the call too, to where you're putting so much pressure to hit the notes that you want, you're actually blowing through the call. So it'll actually distort and it may not even sound like anything. So
yeah,
and it comes down to palate. Is what it right. comes down to is everybody's palate on the top of their roof of their mouth is different. And what we've noticed is, I mean, we've done everything because my brother's a dentist. And so we've used up hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars of Trevor's, which he's all right. He's good for it at this point. Making molds of each other's, all of our mouths and looking at the differences in those molds and kind of looking at, okay, what can be like a very versatile, you know, all the way around call or something of that nature? What could work for that? You know? And so it's like, it's been really interesting trying to figure out how everybody can like make a call for just anybody to blow. And what we've come up with is it's not a thing. You cannot make a one diaphragm reed suits everybody. It just doesn't. And everybody says, well, why is there more than one? And it's like, well, it's just so many different mouth palate types. And I tell people, hey, if you want to cut the reed, go ahead, cut, you know, you can cut the tape on it to fit whatever, you know, I've tried just about every cut known to man. And I can't find any that really like is a real foolproof way to do it. I can't really myself.
Right.
But I you know, it's everyone is different. And so, and that's why that's what goes into a diaphragm call is the latex, the thickness, the stretch, and then the back pressure on the stretch too. And there's two different stretches that you put on that. So,
yeah,
but that's what we're kind of talking about.
Yeah. You know, that's something that, you know, we change calls once we get, say we have a bull starting, cause some of the calls for us will grunt better. Some of them will throw that locator out there better. And then we'll just swap them when we get closer. And then if we're going to do some cow calling, so, you know, talking about different calls, I mean, we have every one of your guys' calls because they all have a purpose in what we do. And then, of course, Gage blows a call different than I do. So those are, and then Chase will be with us this year, my youngest. And hopefully my oldest will be too, if the Army lets him. But all those differences, right?
Yeah.
And so that's one of the things that we do as well. And, you know, same with your, with the, open reed calls that you guys have, the regular, you know, just cow calls. That was something that you, the two tone, I believe it is.
That was a long time in the making. And yes, go ahead on your question.
Yeah. So I used to use a different call that was kind of on the same idea where you could pull the back end of it off. They don't even make them anymore, but you could pull the back end off and you could throw that in your tube and then you could make a cow call bugle is what we called it, because sometimes bulls just don't like that September 3rd to the 6th kind of area. The bulls just kind of respond to those cow calls.
Yep.
And so we could locate bulls with a cow call and then put the end on it, muffle it up, or it's the opposite kind of with the two tone, but the other call you'd put the end on and that would muffle it. But,
those,
and then giving that to like Chase, my youngest son, who doesn't do much with the diaphragm calls, and he could add to that whole dynamic of an elk herd.
Oh, 100%. And there's so many different tones that you can make. It's with the, we have a sound bite. It's called a two-tone. And anyway, yeah. And the cool thing about these is we built them off of a duck reed. So there's no other call. If you look at all the calls on the market, they all have holes in them, but they don't necessarily, the sound doesn't come through the hole. It comes off the tone board.
Oh,
and yeah. all these calls, it comes through the hole, so you can project it any way, any distance and everything. If you look at a lot of the other calls on the market, and they're all blocked off. It's just all the sound is coming off right on the tone board itself, and so it doesn't get that projection actually to like reach further, like a real elk's mouth would, you know.
Right, right. And if you watch a cow when she's actually making those calls, she'll move her mouth to project that, depending on what she's doing, you know.
Yes, yes,
it was opening day like 4 years ago. I actually got in trouble with the lead cow. She came back through the herd and yelled at me to get away from her, and that was using the prototype of
okay.
the two-tone. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's an awesome call. And I think too, like, and I probably, you would agree, it's like watching the cows, the way that they talk and the way that they interact with each other is almost, you know, a bull bugle is a bull bugle, you know,
right.
He does his thing and he walks, but the cows, man, there is so much to that. I think that just learning that side of the whole herd dynamic is really important.
Yeah.
Really
important. I did not know what I said to her, yeah. but she was not having it.
Yeah. It's amazing how you do one cow call and the whole herd will just blow up, gone.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, what in the world did I just do wrong? You know?
Yeah. She was up at the head and she walked all the way back through the herd and came probably within 50 yards of me and then just let me have it. And doing a lot of things I've never heard a cow do before.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they have a whole different language, I think, that's just pretty dynamic, and it's amazing. They, and if you think about it, they rule the herd.
They do.
The cow, yep. Yes, the cow, the lead cow depends on where that whole herd is going, where that bull's going to go, you know, all that kind of stuff. So you really got to key in on that. Don't just hunt for bulls, you know, at
yeah.
that time of year.
I have a lot of people that have come up to me, and this time of year you get people that start talking, well, you guys know. And guys are like, yeah, you know, just where I hunt, the bulls don't respond to calls. And I'm like, what do you mean? Yeah. Well, you know, you call them in the morning and they just run from you. And I'm like, no, they're not running from you. They're following that lead cow. Yeah. Just keep on them. Just keep calling. Yeah. Keep behind them. Eventually they'll stop. When they stop, that's when you do something with them.
Because on TV, you know, they bugle twice and they come running in, they shoot them, right? Isn't that the way it's supposed to work?
Oh, man.
Oh.
You know, and that's another thing, too, is the Cascades are really bad for it. Some of the other places I hunt aren't. But the Cascades, they will be in a certain spot in the morning and they will be in a certain spot in the afternoons.
Mm.
And the mornings, I see guys doing it all the time. Guys will hang out. So they go down and hang out around the water all night and all morning and beat the living tar out of it, rub it, and there's just so much sign, bunch of fresh poop from that morning, and the guys will just stay down there and hunt that stuff, thinking that they're just bedding down anywhere around the corner, whereas, you know, they move 5 miles up the hill. And,
yeah, especially those elk.
Yeah, yeah, and that's exactly right. And so that's why a lot of people don't think that elk call in like the Cascades. I hear it all the time. You know, bulls don't bugle in the Cascades. There's too many wolves. That's, I hear that all the time too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's another big one. That's another big one.
But
we went to Colorado 1 year and going through and you go, there's a bunch of camps around and everything. And we got there the evening before. So we're like, well, let's just get a good night's sleep. We'll hike in tomorrow morning, you know? Anyway, so some of the camps recognized our trucks or something and came up to us. And, man, you guys, you're too early. You're too early, you know.
And what's
going on? Well, they're just not talking. They're just not talking. About four or five different people said that to us. And we went in there, and in 3 days we shot two bulls.
Yeah.
Called in like six.
Yeah.
And all it was is we were bugling at it. You know, we were trying. It's, I think a lot of people think that the bulls should just bugle on their own all the time. And so that's when you think, you know, that's when you can tell when the rut is. But that's just, it's not the case. It's not. You know, sometimes you have to get them to do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And the only way you do that is by walking through the woods and bugling.
Correct.
Yeah. It sucks sometimes when you go miles and you don't hear a bugle, but
days,
yeah,
weeks.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does.
So what would you say on getting back to your calls? We got kind of off on a tangent there. It's easy to do though. When you start talking calling, I think that's, there's so many different, nuances to this as well as calls. That's why we have all these different calls.
Yeah.
What would you say your easiest one? So the easiest one to make a sound out of, I don't want to say the easiest one to blow because, you know, but the easiest one to make a sound out of for somebody that doesn't want to put a bunch of air through it, you know, because some of those harder latexes sometimes are, you really got to push on them, but something that would be like a cow call or something like that.
Yeah. We just made a call. It's called the Easy Cow. It's not our, we made it a little while, released it a little while back. And we just built that on the easiest, because there's a lot of people that choke on calls. There's a lot of people, you know, that's really difficult to do. And you can make it as hard as you want. But the other thing, and as you know, too, Nate, is you can't just throw something in your mouth, a call in your mouth, and just be like, well, I can't do this. You've got to practice. It's just like, you know, shooting a bow for the first time. Yeah, you're not going to be good until you practice, you know, and you start at short ranges and you work your way out to long ranges and then shooting, you know, pretty soon you're shooting broadheads at 60 yards. Well, that's because you practice. The calls are no different. And, but we created a call called the Easy Cow. And it's, I mean, I've given it to my son, my, you know, kids, just here, try this. And then kind of teach them how to put it in their mouth. And then, I mean, it's usually within 5 minutes, they can make a cow call, you know.
Right.
And it's been pretty amazing as far as that call. It's just really, really simple to use. And it's a good beginner call for people that are just starting out that just want to be able to make an elk sound and then work on that. And I think it's like you're getting at, too. It's like you start out with something like that and then let's progress. Now that you have the, you know, that motion, that tongue pressure, what you think that you can consistently make the noise of, go to a different call and try that. And then pretty soon you can really, let's say like the Easy Cow, you're probably not going to do lip balls and giant bugles with it, right? Because it's going to be a lighter stretch. It's going to be just something entry level, but does really, really good cow calls. It's what I will use all year this year if I'm the shooter.
Right.
Because I can make simple noises. And to stop an elk when you're at full draw, it's something that's going to be great for that kind of thing. So it's just applications like you're talking, you know, different calls work for different scenarios.
Yeah. And something that you could have in your mouth when you're the shooter that, because I've made some horrible calls when I tried to stop elk because you get a little bit jacked up.
You and me both.
But, you know, those elephant calls actually do stop elk too, so.
They will. They will, man. I've thrown some cougar calls out there before.
It's easy to do. I've even done it. I've even done it when you call a bull in and you know, the first few bulls you call in, I don't know if it was the same for you. For me, the first bulls I called in, it was like, first thing was like, oh my gosh, that's a real elk. And the second thing was, oh my gosh, that's a real elk.
Oh, that's what I'm worried about this year. Because the first one or two, the old heart flutters start to really take place on me. And I get pretty, pretty wound up on the first couple until I really have to slap myself in the face and say, calm down, you know, stop doing that, you know, because but the first one, you're right. It's like, oh my goodness. It's season. There's an elk in front of me, and this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
You know? And, it's kind of, it's a little, I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. You know, I've had, I probably shouldn't even say this, but first couple that I called in with a bow in my hand, we called in a lot of elk before we ever bow hunted. That was just something my uncles and I did over in the units that we're at during deer season. We would call it elk. And it was just fun to do. And that's when I started deciding, man, I should probably hunt these things. But so the first couple that I called in with a bow in my hand, I'd never even come to draw. And some of those were the best shots I've ever had.
No kidding.
I didn't even have it in me to even think about shooting them. I was like, oh, cool, man. I got that elk in, and you, I got to the point where I was like, well, I won.
And maybe I should shoot it.
Yeah. You know what? I think I'm here to shoot this thing after they leave. So it took me, one year I called two in, and there were Cascade bulls, and I called two in within 3 days, and that were like both real. I mean, if you saw them, you would have been kicking me, but it's pretty fun.
Probably. Were they on, did they have 3 points on one side?
Oh, they were bigger than that. Yeah, one of them was huge. Well, you know, that's all relative to.
No, they're all big. They're all big.
Every one I've shot's been a 400 bull until I get to it. So
you're darn right.
But no, it's just neat. It's neat to see. It's one of those things. So
it is. Definitely is. Definitely.
So, let me see. Wyatt's going to be getting about old enough here to start bow hunting, isn't he?
He's shooting. Actually, he's out in the yard right now. I'm watching him through the window right now. He's shooting his bow right now.
Right on. So, right on. Yeah. Speaking of.
We'll see what happens there. He wasn't super, super confident. I don't know if he's going to still do archery tag or what, but he's been shooting his bow, so that's good.
Yeah, I just. Because, you know, I was thinking about talking about calling. I take it for granted that I started calling when I was, you know, about that age. Mm-hmm. And that makes it, when we're talking about these calls and stuff, it makes it a little bit hard to try to help people that are just getting into it, especially adults. Because kids, for some reason, pick this stuff up and then it sticks.
They do, man. You're totally right. It's unbelievable. Like, and that's what Wyatt was just talking about this year. He's like, I think I'm just going to call for my friends and stuff, you know, and go that route. He wasn't real sure, but they do, man. And they're good at it. Like, kids can pick up to things, and some of them don't even need to read, you know, if you haven't hit puberty yet.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Even some of them that have are really good, you know, and I would just, you know, as we're talking about reads here and easy calls and those kind of things, one of the things I'd like to point out to everybody listening is get your kids calls, you know.
Yeah.
Elk season, if you find some good spots that are not real, that are kind of mellow, we've hunted some spots that are pretty mellow for elk, and you give those kids a call, some of those kids will go out there and call you in a bull. Could you imagine?
Dude. Oh, and it happens all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah,
you know?
people should grab their kids, grab some calls, get your kids going. It's, you know, Gage, he's been blowing calls ever since, not right, but he's been blowing calls ever since he was a little guy.
I love it. No competition there at all. None.
No, it'll be fun this year. He's actually probably a better caller than I am. I think as far as noise, you know, the sound.
Sure.
The difference is knowing when to zig and zag. That's the biggest.
You hit the nail on the head right there. You could be the world champion, best caller in the whole country, and you could still not know when to make the call at the right time.
Right. And it's all emotion too.
It is. It is.
People got to realize that, you know, the emotion of the time, it really spells. I mean, we've actually had bulls that were really, really mellow, and when we were able to turn up the heat on them that big bull that my brother-in-law shot, we followed that thing for 4 hours, and he kept telling us to stay away, and finally we were able to turn up that emotion enough to get him to actually come over and do something about it, and I think that's what... if we could do anything about calling, if we could teach that, it's hard to teach though. You just got to be around it.
it is, but it's that, you know, you're exactly right. The calling with emotion is 100% what you have to do as far as to sound realistic too. And what I mean by that is maybe it's not, you know, the grunts and your posturing or whatever, you know, you like a peacock or whatever. I'm not talking about that, but I'm talking about like sometimes it's real bulls make a lot of noise. I mean, they make a lot of noise. They walk heavy. They stiff leg. They rake a lot. So, I mean, maybe it's calling as you're raking and then stopping raking just to scream and bugle and then go back at it again. I mean, the realisticness of that, you hear, you know, a tree getting raked and everything, and then it stops, and then a bugle, then a tree raking it. That's emotion, right? That's realistic. That's a nature sound. And it's doing stuff like that that just really adds to the whole repertoire of your calling. And it really, I mean, you can, emotional calling is the only way to go about it, rather than just aimlessly walking through the woods and just tuning on a flute, you know?
Right. Yeah. And we've, I think also too, one of the things that we've noticed is, like, on the bigger bulls that have cows with them, you know, that are, you know, because we call a lot of bulls off of those herds, but when you get into that big bull and he's trying to move around so he can catch your wind, not because he thinks you're a hunter, but he could tell a lot by how you smell. And when he's making those moves and you're countering them, that's as big of a thing as your bugle, I think, because then he's going, oh crap, this guy's trying to catch my wind.
I would agree.
And then that's finally what got us that bull, in the Cascades, is finally the way he went down, and he took us into a spot where he thought he could get our wind, and we had to run to get out of his wind. But once we made that circle and then bugled on the back, that's when he came in.
And sometimes that's it too. Like, I mean, just turning and running. Like, this ain't going to work, guys. Yeah. I mean, abort. Like, you step in a bee's nest almost. Just let's get the heck out of here, because it's going to go bad in a hurry.
Yeah, he's going to wind us here real quick if we don't get out of here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and realizing, and that comes from experience, realizing that that bull is not just, he's not just there willy-nilly bugling. They are smart animals. They are not stupid. And
there's a lot of things that they have to dodge out in those woods, you know, to live, you know, to be a mature bull.
Right. There's a lot of small bulls they have to dodge to keep their harem.
There you go.
Yeah. And so they're playing every trick in the book to try to figure out who you are, which is another kind of neat thing, because especially Cascades, they probably Rosies too. I don't know. I've never hunted the coast. I don't want to. That looks too hard to me.
Nobody wants to. Nobody wants to, man.
Maybe you could say that this is something that's happens over there too or not, but they pretty much got their pecking order figured out by the time the cows start getting ripe. And and so when you add to that mix every bull in that herd, because you always have those little guys falling around. I mean, that's how we get these smaller bulls coming in, is they just come in to see who in the heck we are. They never bugle. They just, you know, walk in.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the curiosity, honestly, is a huge thing too.
Yeah.
You know, usually with smaller bulls, you know, they'll do that. But early season, those bigger bulls will still kind of walk around and not show their cards, you know, sometimes too. It's just every scenario is so different. So different.
And
it's like, man. And that's the fun part about it, is just there's no one way to do it. There's a thousand different ways to do it. You just got to do it right that one time.
right.
You know.
Right.
Definitely.
So, you know, I've got you on here a couple times before talking about this elk hunting stuff, and I could talk about it all day long. Mm-hmm. But I think we're talking some pretty high level stuff now. What would be the first tip that you would give somebody just getting into it? Because that's really what I'm trying to do, is help people get into bulls. I know, you know, we put out a little thing that we do trying to help people find elk. And a lot of guys used it last year, and they got into bulls for the first time. They've been hunting for like 5 years, and they see, you know, maybe one bull. But by putting these priorities down and stuff, they were able to get into a lot more elk last year.
That's awesome.
And that's one of the things that we're trying to do is, you know, I know a lot of guys that are hunting, buy a lot of stuff, buy a lot of calls, work on their calls all year long, and they just don't see elk. What would be your number one tip for somebody being able to get into elk?
So, and I think you covered it earlier on, and it has nothing to do with calling, has nothing to do with any of that, which I recommend you do that once you get into the ground. But you talked about, which was the coolest thing I think that you said, not the coolest thing you said, but one of the really great takeaways is you have 10 spots already picked out. 10 spots. And you said some of them are small. Some of them I just get off the road. I go, maybe I'll jump over, and I'm just making this up, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe I'll just jump over this ridge and bugle down into this bottom. And if they're there, they're there. If they're not, I'm moving on. And that is the huge, huge key. I think you don't get hung up on a spot.
Yeah.
And so many people, and people that are veteran, I've seen people like, and have just, you know, they go and they said, well, they were here last year. There was three different herds, and this is where they came. This is the wallows that they used last year, and see all these rub trees. And yeah, that may have been the case, but something happened, something. I don't know if it was a fire pushed them out or whatever. It could have, anything could have happened, and they're not there either yet or this year right now. And don't stay there and just utilize that time, because time, I mean, most people get that week for a season, you know, and in that week you need to be mobile. You need to go make the opportunity rather than hope for the opportunity.
Right.
I guess.
Right. And that's kind of what we put together in the little series that we did, is we tried to show people that you can't just rely on, blind luck, I guess. You got to put yourself into it and think about this stuff. If you're gonna spend all the time, effort, and money, you might as well in the off season spend the brain power of trying to create a plan. And I think that's one of the big things that we've been trying to help people do, is figure out, you know, get, like you said, even three spots. Get three spots figured out.
Yeah. No, that's what I always say. Get at least three spots. It's great to, and then once you're there, you know, the next step is, okay, elk are big animals. They make sign. They make tracks.
Yep.
They make, and so a lot of hunting, and I think you and I did a podcast about this before, a lot of hunting is woodsmanship too, you know, kind of a woodsmanship. So look at the tracks. Look at how old do you think those are, you know? If they're there, they will leave signs that they were there. I mean, they are, a 700 plus pound animal. They're going to leave a sign that they were there. Yeah. So you just look for those things, and then you'll know, okay, yes, I am where elk are living right now. And then from there on, it's back to your maps. It's back to your Onyx. It's back to your mapping, whatever you're using for your mapping, and looking for those benches, looking for those south facing slopes. Elk have to have you know, a few things, you know, some cover, some food, and some water. They just have to have those three things. So you got to go over those things. Okay. Is there cover here? Yeah. There's plenty of timber. Okay. Let's go to the next, you know, is there food here? Yeah. These meadows or whatever. And then is there a water source within a mile, I would say, because they can travel a long ways without, and they drink, you know, they get some water from eating the wet grass in the morning and stuff. So, I mean, you got to look at all those things, and this is all before you even made a peep. You know, you haven't even made a bugle yet or a cow call. And so these kind of things are very important, and you covered it already, is you have to be around elk to kill elk.
Right. Yeah. And one of the other things that I think has helped me over the years, probably more than anything else that I've, is actually when I start thinking about it, right? Because I was that guy. I was that guy that would go out and run into elk, and I would put on 10 miles in the wrong spot and finally find one somewhere.
Right.
And it's to take note where you're finding elk and understand what that looks like, and then understand the time of day, and then look on maps. Why did you find that elk there?
Yep. And then replicate that.
Yep, and replicate it. Exactly. Yeah. And then so you could take that, look on a map, and go, man, this is like a little micro area here, right? So we got water, food, and bedding right here. Now, how many other places do I have in my unit that have that same thing? And then that way, if those elk aren't there, you go to that next place that looks just like that.
Yep.
And that's what we do. That's how we do it. But I think that's probably one of the biggest tips that I think anybody could give, is too many people too many people, you know, have heard their buddy shot one up here, and then they hunt the living tar out of something that they don't see any sign in, and elk are going to make sign. They're just going to do it.
They're big. They are big animals, and that is just it. They will make tracks. I promise you that. And if you're not around them, it's really hard to shoot them.
Yeah.
It's really, really hard.
Okay. Okay. So what would be, now you found some animals, would be your second, your tip about, you know, calling? And because I know how much you guys call, I do the same exact thing. I got talked out of it for years, and we tried sneaking in on them and all this and that, and none of that worked for me. But what would be your second, your biggest tip once you get into elk and you're like, man, I know there's elk here. Now, how do I proceed with calling these guys?
Okay, so now let's say the dance has started, right? So you know there's elk. They're over in this draw, and I don't know how you know they're there. You've either tracked them to there or you heard them, which would be the best case scenario.
Right.
And hearing them is just, I mean, it's half the battle. You have to hear is it just cows calling? Okay, what mood are those cows in? This is the part that honestly, the being around elk thing is something that, you know, you can do without, you know, anybody can do that. Anybody can go find topography, say there should be elk there, hike in there and find elk. The next step is reading their temperament of where they're at in what they're doing. Is he bugling? Is he bugling on his own? Is he bugling at another bull possibly? It's the dance that starts that just creates the whole temperament of the situation.
Right.
So, and what time of day is it? You know, jot all these things down mentally. Like, is it mid morning? They've been bugling all night, doing herd talk and everything. And now they're headed to go bed down. And all he's doing is bugling, keeping up with his cows. And they're going to go to bed. And that's best case scenario, honestly. People don't think so, but just like you already covered, Nate, that's best case scenario. Are they going away from me? You know, okay, now when I bugle, what does he do? You know, does he bugle back to me? Okay, he answered me, which is the greatest feeling in elk hunting. I mean, let's just be honest. It is. It's some people will not hunt, honestly, because they want to hear that bull bugle back to them. And that is the truth. There is so much self-gratification of you making a sound and him hearing that and bugling back. It's awesome.
It is
awesome. But a lot of times people will take that sound and I'll say, well, did you advance on him? Did you move? And he's like, no, why would I do? He's bugling.
Yeah.
He's
bugling. We set up on him.
He's bugling. I'm like, okay, well, he's telling you where he's at. You told him where you're at. And that's kind of where you guys are at.
Yep.
So
I played that game for years.
Exactly. But it's just taking all those tiny little tips and things that you learn over the years. And honestly, like, it's from the screw ups. It's the times that you didn't do it right. That's going to teach you the most and really recall that. Like when I was growing up elk hunting, I would have a journal and, I've actually started to do it, here in the last few years too. It's actually been kind of fun to do.
Be a bestseller if you publish that thing.
No, it's not that good. It's kind of a teaching thing of what I used to do is like I would even go as I was kind of an idiot, but I would go and I would draw out the whole scenario. Okay, the elk were here. Here's the topography, and then I would write down at the bottom. I did this, and they ran from me, or whatever it may be. They circled around, and then why did they do that? Well, it's because they're trying to get my wind, or whatever it may have been. And so I could actually learn better from that rather than just to look at it. You know, I had to actually put pen to paper to really kind of take into perspective of what really happened.
Yeah, focus your thoughts.
Exactly. And it just, those kind of things are the learning curves of elk hunting is you hit it on the head. You know, finding them is the hardest thing.
It is.
That's the hardest part.
Yeah.
And then once you find them, okay, then take it slow and kind of decipher what the situation may be. And then it's all the motions in between there and loosing an arrow is what it's going to make you a seasoned or good elk hunter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think a lot of times it's people, you know, like you said, you journal this, and I'm the type of guy that has to do that if I'm going to focus on anything. I have to put it on a piece of paper to where I could read it and it's in front of me and I go, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Whereas if I just let that go, then I'll be doing the same stuff over and over and doing the same dumb thing that I did last year.
And that's how I learned how to do that, because I did it over and over. And I said, I just did this last week and it screwed up the same way. I'm like, why? You
know? Right. Right.
Exactly.
And I think that's just the way my brain works. But so what we've done too is I actually did this exact same thing, but I made a checklist, and I've actually shared that with people now, where they could go and get our checklist on you know, trying to prioritize those spots. And and that's, once I did that to myself, that's when we started getting into elk a lot more consistently. And we just leave alone. We just don't even go to a lot of the spots that I used to go to. We just don't even touch them.
Yeah. Yep.
You know?
No, and you learn. That's what happened, is you learn.
Yeah.
You know?
There's one.
It's just a...
Yeah, I'm sorry. There's one spot.
Go ahead.
Yeah, there's one spot that if you were to look on like GoHunt or any of these softwares that tell you where you should be hunting and this and that, it would never show up there. And, you know, we talked about don't get stuck to a spot, but I'm telling you, I'm stuck to that spot. And I'm going to kill an elk out of there before I get too old to pack in there anymore. But
I love it. There is some of that nostalgic stuff that you just hunt because, right?
Well, part of the problem is we did jump a bull in there 1 year. But I mean, it you know, we only spent a day in there. But the amount of sign and the amount of elk that are in there, and we went back in there and put cameras up this year, and there was there's so much sign in there. But that area, the problem was we ran into some other hunters in there, and they had a camera in there for the last 5 years, and they showed me some of their pictures.
Oh.
Yeah, they should have never done that.
They shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, because there's elk in there, I guarantee you, that are 15 years old. You know, just old, nasty. And we heard one morning in there. We heard a bull in there that sound. You've probably been around a few of those old bulls that sound kind of like more like a cow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
those are the ones that get nicknamed.
Yeah. yep. And so there were several of those on the camera in there. And so that's, and it's a Cascade bull too, which is kind of my thing. I just love those big old dark horn Cascades.
Oh, they are awesome.
So
they are.
So with all that said, that we said, don't do that. Yeah, we're doing that this year.
We're doing that.
No, we'll go in there. If there's nothing moving though, we'll just get the heck out, you know?
Gotcha. No, it's there's so many different ways to do it, Nate. But at the same time, just finding them is the toughest part. And then once you find them, take their temperature. Where are they at? What are they doing? And what kind of how angry or how lustly, if that's even a word,
right?
Are they? You know,
right.
So, but like you said, so I if I'm in that situation, I know where elk are. I'm going to start out with a cow call. I'm going to start out with just a few cow calls, and I'm going to stand there and wait just for a little bit. And because if I can get a bull to consistently answer to a cow call, the chances of me getting a shot at him or him coming in are very, very high.
Right.
Very high. So if I can do that, I'm just going to stick with it. I won't even introduce a bugle. If I don't hear anything bugle from that, then I'm going to throw out a bugle, just throw out a regular location. And sit there sometimes 30 seconds to 3 minutes, whatever, and just sit there and see if anything answers back. And then I'm going to go through a bugle and a chuckle.
Right.
And it's something different usually with every bull. They want, however you take it, is to hear a certain sound. Some of them will just respond to a chuckle just for some weird reason. That's what they don't like to hear, and that's what's going to fire them up.
Right.
And then, you know, there's a ton of techniques you can use there, like copycat technique. You say whatever they say. You know, if he's barking and then chuckling, you bark and then you chuckle. You know, and all these different – I mean, that goes into a whole different realm of elk talk. But
right.
This is what I kind of do as far as just from the start, just to feel out the situation and what's going on. And then once that bull bugles back to me, give it a little bit of, you know, is he going to bugle right after that? Is he going to bugle in the next 5 minutes? You know, and if he is going to bugle, maybe he'll just bugle his way all the way in and I don't have to do hardly anything. Or do I have to get him fired back up? Where are we at? Where his temperament? Where is all these things at and where he's at right now in the rut? So just all those little tiny things you can really, and that's why the journal is so cool, is kind of, you can jot those things down. Like when I bugled, he bugled and chuckled, and then he tore up a tree.
Right.
And okay, well, what's that telling me? You know, that's telling me it's getting pretty serious right now. He's getting fairly wound up. And so I need to maybe, you know, escalate this thing to the next level and get closer and start raking a tree myself or whatever that may be. So, but all these things, it's a piece of the puzzle that will tell you something. They're right. Small pieces, but they will, each one will tell you something little about the situation. And so, but that's the English, if that's the right word, that's the English of it, man. It's everything's different.
That's another reason to have all the different calls in your quiver too.
Correct.
You know, I knew people, and I was one of those guys, the old ivory plate Primos. You remember those?
Oh man. Yeah.
There's no other call out there. Well, I've since learned, and I've called in a lot of bulls with that call, but, having several different sounds is, like you said, some of them don't even, we've switched calls before and had a bull bugle after we bugled for a half an hour with a different call.
Yep.
And just that different pitch. Yep.
Yep. And it's something he didn't like. It's just weird. It's just like it something is. That he, in his brain was like, I've heard this same thing, but now that's different.
Right.
I don't know what it is, but it's definitely, that is definitely the truth.
Right. And you remember when the old Hoochie Mama first came out?
Oh,
and
man,
it was calling in a lot of bulls there at first. And then it sounded like there was Hoochie Mamas everywhere in the woods.
Because there was.
Yep. And so we always kind of went to the oldest call. Like when a new call came, we would go back to a different call. But you don't have to do that with the reeds. You could do so much different things with a reed that, you know, it doesn't sound like the other person with that same reed.
And then an open frame too, like the open,
true.
All those, yep. You can make so many different calls with them and so many different, that is true. It's not just one and done.
Right.
It's the variations. That's the diaphragm reed, honestly, is the huge, biggest tool in elk hunting, honestly. It really is. And then for the people that have a tough time with them, the open reeds are awesome because you can do a ton of different sounds with those too, you know?
Yeah, especially, you know, I know you guys don't use the rubber band on yours, but so I carry both calls, and then I have one with a rubber band set for more like a cow and then one more like a calf.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, that's how I run it.
Steve puts his on. I think he uses the rubber band. I don't. I just... So I can open up the reed and do whatever I want.
It's just a quick reference for me, you know, to be
It's a good idea. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's not a bad idea at all. So absolutely.
But yeah, you know, and that's, I'm going to ask you one more thing because we do this hunting the Cascades and, we'll hunt a spot and we'll get into elk and it's just like, man, nothing's really going on with these guys. They're starting to think about it. So we're just going to leave them alone.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll come back later.
Mm-hmm.
And then your calls will all change. And we've actually had this happen to us at the beginning of the week in spots where that bull was just not even going to do anything with us. And then you come back at the end of the week and something has changed and he's just fired up.
Yep.
Do you hunt elk? Because the reason I'm asking this is because there's a lot of guys, you know, like that they don't, especially now with the gas prices, they're not going to go over Eastern Oregon and they may find an elk and they'll think, oh man, yeah, I found one, but he's just not going to call. So I'll never hunt him again. Have you ever found that you go back in and you start hunting that bull again? And sure enough, he starts calling.
Yeah, 100%. And a lot of the bulls that we hunt, to be real clear, and is just, we don't hunt a lot of the same bulls because we travel so much.
Right.
Country. So, but here in Roosevelt country, we have been in this last little while hunting a lot of the same bulls. And it's amazing how I mean, if you have one hot cow, it can change a lot of things, man. It can really, it can take it from just a lazy bull that's just going to pick up and tuck tail every single time to right. a bull that really, you know, they like their girlfriends. They don't like to lose them, you know?
Right.
So if you can get it close enough without spooking the cows and stuff and getting him fired up in just a day's time, he can change temperament. I mean, it's amazing how fast it can just go from just from zero to hero. You know what I mean? So we've totally seen that numerous times. And we've seen it the other way too, to where it's just, I'm on the herd. I know there's this bull in this herd, but today he is not. I mean, it's like he's got his, you know, lips super glued together.
Right,
you know?
Right.
He just will not talk. He won't do nothing. And I know I'm within 200 yards of him and I cannot get him to do anything.
Right.
You know? And it's just one of those things where they have to be in the right temperament. They have to be in the right moods at times in order for our techniques
right.
to really, really work really, really well.
Right.
So, and that's what's so cool too about elk hunting is you can use those other techniques. You know, you can do the slip around, sneak around, they call it herd shadowing. You know,
yeah.
you've heard that
yeah.
term used before. You can do, that's a total technique that works. And a lot of people kill elk that way. It's just, that's just not the technique that we really choose to use.
I was going to say, yeah, that works for other people. It doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
I might as well just leave those elk if they're not going to be talking.
I rarely put on the moccasins. So I'll tell you that. I rarely do that.
You know, and that's been my nemesis against blacktail deer is the same reason, but,
Yeah.
So over east, you know, I mean, and when I say over east, I mean all the way over to Colorado and Wyoming. Have you seen that though, where there's a bull? You guys rarely hunt the same bull over and over, do you?
Very rarely.
Yeah.
No, we cover a lot. So our technique is all based off of finding the bull that is in that temperament that I'm talking about. And so to do that, we're not going to sit on a herd for a
right.
couple days waiting for him. We're going to go find another
herd.
That's what we try to do.
Yeah. And so when we hunt Eastern Oregon, you know, because you're bound to a unit.
Correct.
You know, we have done that before and hunted the same elk and got into them every day. And then all of a sudden the switch changes and then every elk in that herd's starting to talk and the cows are, you know, messing with each other and stuff.
Yep.
And so the reason I'm saying this, the reason I'm asking these questions is because I just don't want people giving up. Say they drew one tag this year, because I got a bunch of friends here that drew one tag and we were used to just getting out of the unit and going somewhere else, but that's not a thing in Oregon anymore. So, I think you would agree though that happens sometimes. If you're into elk and you got the time to stay with those elk, sometimes they will switch.
Yeah. And we'll do it for the day. I mean, we'll definitely do it for the day. Like we'll just sit, we call it slow playing them, right? So it's a technique that we use as far as just sit back and wait and see what they're going to do, where they're going to bed, where they're going to go. You know, we won't just barge in on them. And a lot of the reasons that we'll do that is because the wind's not right, you know,
right.
or something of that nature, waiting for the wind drafts to change at 10:30 or whatever, you know, they change and stuff like that. Yes. But you touched on a thing as far as like people, you know, just kind of going, well, this was my spot. This was my shot that I had and I took it, you know, and there wasn't any elk here, you know,
right.
and I totally, that is a real thing. And the biggest tool that you can have in your tackle box in elk hunting is a mind frame of it could happen anytime.
Yep.
It only takes one.
Yep.
It takes one. And I guarantee this has happened to you. How many times have you thought, well, this today's screwed, you know, haven't seen nothing. And 5 minutes later, you have a dead elk on the ground.
It's so true. There's a place that I hunt where I call in bulls in that place. You could hear cars going by on the road.
Right.
And the way I found that place was it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon and I was done. It was hot. And shoot, it was probably like 2000s, early 2000s. And I was just walking up through there and I was slopping my way through and my boots were getting stuck and a bull heard that and he screamed at me.
Yeah.
And And I hadn't seen an elk for 4 days. And it only takes that one shot, you know?
Yeah.
And that's
yeah. you were walking with emotion.
Well, I was. What actually happened? I blew the whole opportunity. But he bugled at me, and without even thinking, I just bugled back, and he was on me within seconds. And I just couldn't get a shot. He was just right on the other side of a bunch of willows. But I didn't think about what I was doing. But the funny thing was, the minute he came in, there was a bull off to my left that ran right into the middle of that herd, and that bull must have been shadowing that herd, and he thought I was that other bull.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah.
So he was chasing you off. He didn't even know that you were there.
Yep, he didn't even know that I was a human or anything else. He thought I was that other bull that had been messing with him all day. But
at the same time, like, what created all that was you making actual natural elk sounds.
Yeah.
That's what walking they slopped through wall, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And so, I mean, if you look at it like that, it's like, wow, how did this all start? Well, it started with me slopping through the mud. You know?
Yeah. So from now on, I don't sneak through, you know, and back in those days, everybody was sneaking around and you.
Oh, yeah.
Shoot, man.
I'm like a herd of elephants.
Oh, I've had elk bugle at me for falling down.
Oh yeah.
You'll even see it on video one time. Gage, we had a bull that was in, and it was just hung up out there. It actually had an arrow in it from another person, and we didn't know it at the time. We didn't know it until afterwards. But I was up there calling, and I stepped on a yellow jacket's nest.
Ooh.
And so I'm running around up there trying to get away from these yellow jackets. And that's what brought the bull in. He finally heard me running around up there trying to get away from the yellow jackets. And so he came across Gage, and Gage had himself stuck behind a tree, which, you know, he has since figured that one out. But, that bull, as far as I know, that bull still got an arrow stuck in it. But
no kid.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But no, it is. It's those sounds. Yep. And it's the no quit attitude.
It is.
It's the no quit. You can't, if you've got 7 days allotted to hunt elk all 7 days.
Yes.
Just do it. And you will learn so much.
Yep.
So much.
And if you feel like giving up, just open up your pack or look down at your call, and every one of your calls, well, not the diaphragms, but every one of them says it only takes one. And that is such a cool thing to put on a call.
it could happen just right around the corner.
Yep.
Just stay with it.
Well, we've been at it here for a little while, and I don't want to keep you. I know how important your time is right now.
Oh, man, it's so good to talk to you, brother.
It is.
So great. We don't do it enough, you know what?
Yeah, I know. One last thing I got to ask you, though.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that we should keep track of, that Born and Raised Call Company needs to keep track of.
Okay.
Is which color of the bomb tube calls more elk in?
And which color?
Which color? Because we got both colors. We got a camouflage, and we got the tan one. I don't remember what it's called.
Oh, I got you. And
so I took the tan one because it's absolutely the best color ever on an elk bugle. And Gage took the camo one. And so we're having, within our group, we're gonna see which one calls in more bulls.
Okay.
But I'm here to tell. I'm okay. I'm putting my foot down. I'm drawing a line in the sand right now. Okay. That tan bugle is going to call in more bulls than any other bugle on the market.
I could bet on that. Yeah, I think that would. Yeah, I think you're right.
Are you carrying the tan one this year?
I actually had a seminar here at Portland here a couple weeks ago. I gave my bugle tube away. To a kid, but I just take mine, and what I've done is put some stickers on it, and so that's terrible.
We got one of those too.
I'm terrible at marketing. Let's just be honest, Nate. Okay, I put on stickers that no bugle comes with. Okay, and anyway, and that's what I did last year. And then I sometimes, you know, when I get bored or something, you're sitting down and taking a break during the day, I'll do a wrap on a rope or something around it. And I'll make, make it my own, but I don't know. I'm sure I'll have some, one with either a camo or a mocha.
Yeah. Mocha. Okay. That's the color. That's the color.
Yeah,
that mocha sleeve though is that's the best looking bugle that's ever been put on the market as far as I'm concerned.
I appreciate that. Yeah. We ordered those and it was like, what are you guys thinking? It was green and that mocha color. And when it showed up, we were like, oh,
it looks good. It looks good.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do that on Instagram this year. All the guys that have bought those, I really would like to run a poll and I'm going to talk up that mocha one. Of course, Gage is like, yeah, whatever, Dad. But
the problem, the only problem is, and I've been in the warehouse for the last 2 days shipping bugle tubes.
There's a lot of camo out there, huh?
Let me just throw this one out there. It's probably somewhere around 5-1.
Yeah, well, people are buying the wrong tube then. They need to buy the mocha.
I think that 1% is going to be the good caller.
It's the 1% that knows what they're doing. That's the one.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yes.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yep. All right.
We'll see, and we'll, yeah, maybe at the end of the season we'll do the same poll and see what comes up.
Yeah, too. I'd
be curious.
Yeah, and we could do it per capita too. So like, being that there's 5-1 out there, we could adjust that, knowing that there's
true.
Five more.
That is true.
And we could do it, you know, per capita. I think that's something that we should do because I plan. So here's my plan. I plan on making my percentages really high for that mocha tube.
Really pumping that tube up. Maybe I'll run that tube this year too, and then we'll have something. Base off of. Right?
There you go. And if Gage starts calling more with the camo tube, I'm going to throw it in the woods.
Yeah, I would. I'd burn it. I'd burn the cover. That's what I would do. Behind his back.
No. If you run the mocha, we need. I guarantee you that mocha tube's going to call in bulls.
It's got to, right? It's got to.
Yeah. All righty. Well, we'll let you get going. Thanks a bunch. I sure appreciate it. And, you know, the wealth of information that you give to these guys that are listening. You guys, if you're listening to this and you're looking to get into elk, just do what we were saying here. Just do what Trent has said, and I guarantee you it'll work. And it's going to help your elk hunting. And I really appreciate you coming on here and giving people your experience, man. That's just cool.
Thank you so much. And if it helps one person, it was so well worth it, man.
Yeah.
So well
worth it. I hear you. All right.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it, man.
All right. We're going to get off of here. Thanks for listening to the Life Outdoors, guys. And if you like this, please do us a favor and give us a five-star rating on iTunes? I think it is. Give us a rating over there. And, of course, you could always check out our website and go over to Born and Raised. And you guys still got some calls, right?
We got plenty. Yes,
okay.
We do.
Go over
yes,
there. Get do. Those calls. You should have already had them. If you don't have them, and buy a mocha tube. You don't even – if you just carry it, you'll kill more elk.
You'll kill more elk. You don't even have to use it.
You don't even have to use it.
I love it.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys, and hopefully you got something out of this.
Thanks for joining us for another installment of the Bearbow Hunter Podcast. Remember, we couldn't even be talking about this stuff if it wasn't for our public land. So go and support the people that are protecting it, backcountry hunters and anglers and TRCP. Also, if you'd like to see more of Bearbow Hunters, go to our Facebook group, go to our Instagram at Bearbow Hunters, like us, and hashtag all of your photos with your Bearbow goodness in them, Bearbow Hunter. We have a website as well. You can go over there, check out the rest of the podcast. We have videos, we have t-shirts and hats. Thanks again. Until then, shoot straight.